Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. The Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Previously recorded with Mark as the host of The Mark Kohler Show.
Enjoy this fresh take on strategies to better live the American dream.
Everybody to today's show. My name is Mark Kohler. Excited to be here with you. Woo! The first day of real Obamacare. Man, you guys excited? Pretty neat, right? Well, hopefully many of you are enjoying the trip, the ride down the exchange lane, seeing if you're shopping out there. Hey, I welcome. We're going to talk a little bit about that and more. Today is a power-packed show about living the American dream, making money, saving money, staying out of hot water, protecting our assets. We'll hit a little Obamacare, places to go to learn more. I mean, just good stuff. So welcome. If you're a new listener, thank you for tuning in. And I will do my best to not let you down. And I say we because I've got an incredible panel of experts coming through the show today. And it's going to be full of helpful hints and strategies. Of course, the topic of the show today is that of contractors, employees, subcontractors, paying people under the table, what to watch out for. This is huge. Big topic. I was inspired. I want to give some kudos out to Jason in Sacramento. I was there speaking this weekend at a conference, and he made some excellent comments on handyman, contractors, watching out for all those issues that we're going to get into here. And it was phenomenal. It was a really good comment in my workshop Saturday. And I said, you know what, we got to do a show on this. And so I rallied the troops. I'm grateful we've got some excellent people on the show today. So we're going to be talking about that. For those that are new, my name is Mark Kohler. I'm a CPA, attorney, best-selling author, family man, surfer, scoutmaster, just trying to hold it all together. And I'm grateful for many of you that continue to listen to the show. I promise to not let you down and find good topics. And if you ever have an idea or question or concern, please let me know. I'd love to hear from you. So let's hit a few housekeeping items. First, I want to talk about Obamacare a little bit. Some of you may have tuned into my webinar last week. It was Thursday night, a full hour in front of my computer screen with at least 15 to 20 slides breaking it down. Tips and strategies under what we call Kohler Care around here. I think you would like it. It takes the best of Obamacare and we avoid the worst. And so we've got all sorts of little strategies to make sure you're getting tax deductions for any expenses you incur for your health care and avoiding the taxes of Obamacare. There's some really, really helpful tips and strategies. If you wanted to watch or listen to that webinar, it is recorded. You can go to my website, Strategic Wealth Alliance, click on that. It's $19 for the webinar, and every month I do a live webinar like that where you get to ask questions and on my webcam with my computer screen. We really dive in nuts and bolts on a topic. Now, for those of you that might be going to one of my workshops, don't pay for the webinar. I want to say that right now. I've got 6 workshops this fall. The first one was in Sacramento over the weekend. When we hit Obamacare, we got into it so in depth. We stayed 2 hours late in the workshop, and everybody was like, no, Mark, keep going, let's keep talking. And there was only a few people that had to leave, but we went over 2 hours. Now, I promise you, if you come to one of my workshops, I'm not going to keep you 2 hours longer, but everybody wanted to just keep brainstorming and masterminding, going over the healthcare plan. So it was a really powerful workshop. Now, I've learned from that. I've trimmed it down. We've got flushed out a lot of issues. Of course, every day we learn more. As even President Obama said, he's learning more about the plan and how it's going to roll out. But anyway, this weekend I'll be in Seattle. So for my Seattle guests listening on the show, don't pay for the webinar, where you're going to get all that and more when you come to the full-day workshop on Saturday. And How about those Seahawks, by the way? Whoa. I'm glad they're not playing on Saturday. It would have totally killed my workshop. But, wow, congrats all you fans up there loving the Seahawks. I grew up in Washington State. For those that don't know, that's where I grew up. Man, I'm a Seahawks fan. Jim Zorn, huh? I can throw down, right? I can throw down some old names. So, anyway, 2 weeks later, I'll be in Chicago. So, check it out, folks, if you haven't seen that announcement yet. It's full day. We'll be going through the Obamacare. Just that section alone on Obamacare is worth the entire day of tax strategies and tips, and you'll lock it. You'll love it. I've got my 2013 updates. It's killer. So then it's New York a couple weeks later, then back to Orange County, then off to Hawaii on December 7th. Get a tax write-off. Come to Hawaii for the workshop. You'll love it. Now, in today's newsletter, I wrote an article on Obamacare, so read that as well. A couple of extra little tips and strategies there. You'll be seeing articles from me in my blog repeatedly through the fall here as we continue to flush out the issues related to Obamacare. But I know you've heard about enough about that in the news as I have, so we're not going to spend time on that today. I want to hit a couple other topics. Now, one thing I mentioned on the newsletter last week was that we were going to talk about investment clubs. And during the open forum, we had so many questions for the open forum radio show, which is once a month. Last week, we were not able to get into the investment club topic. So I wanted to just talk about this for a few minutes. I've got some special guests that are going to come on the show and tell us about their investment club. But hear me out. Here's my first point. All of us out there could be a little bit better real estate investor, a little bit better investor mindset. And that, my friends, comes, in my opinion, through networking and getting out once or twice a month in the evenings and just socializing and learning something new. Well, folks, there's the National Association of Real Estate Investment Clubs. It's called National REIA. I'll give you a website here in a moment. But there's clubs sponsored around the country that are built just for that purpose, and they're amazing. And I've got some special guests here from San Diego, Daryl and Emran, on the line with us now. I think, Daryl, Emran, you guys there?
Yeah, we're here.
Awesome. Hey, well, welcome to the show. I wanted to bring up this topic of investment clubs, kind of spread the good word. Tell us what you got going on in San Diego.
Well, first, Mark, I would like to thank you for having us on your show. You're amazing. We've known each other for years now, and you've helped us in our business. And you're absolutely right. Networking is the key, I think, to this business, relationships. People definitely need to get out to the investment clubs wherever they live and network their butts off.
Key to life.
Yeah, and you know what? You know what shocks me a lot of times is that people that are, and I'm not going to pick on any one industry here. I'll name several. But you've got your stodgy lawyers and your CPAs that think they know everything, or lawyers, you know, we, as professionals, can get a little cocky. And you've got your realtors that get their broker, you know, crammed down. This is the way you be a realtor, and contractor associations and interior design associations. And we kind of get in this mindset that our association does it best, or we know the most and this and that. But really, folks, every time I go to an investment club meeting, which it's just a pool of all sorts of professionals, retired and active and all sorts of medical, I mean, just everybody coming from every life experience. When they get in a room and they talk about investing in real estate, I always learn something. People, we've got to not have a cocky attitude. I mean, tell me some of the topics you guys cover in your club throughout the year.
Well, you know, pretty much a little bit of everything. We'll go with what's hot right now, with the next new thing, education. We've got you coming to the club later this week with your partners, Lee Chen. And
Hey, now hold it. This was not a self-serving call, guys. Now I appreciate you throwing that out.
Yeah, but you know, but you're a wealth of information and the people you work with. So we love to bring you on. We bring on self-development people. We bring on the own members of our club that are doing business. We try to get folks up and talk about their own deals and their own business. We have sponsors, whether they're home inspection companies or lenders. I mean, everybody gets a voice, and everybody's up there, and everybody has something useful to bring. It really what it is. you know, not just masterminding it or networking, it's masterminding, you know?
Well, and also,
yeah, I love it.
We don't pitch any sort of, you know, real estate education that costs $10,000 or $20,000. It's really, you're getting a big, giant bang for your buck. At $14, you're going to come, you're going to get educated, and you're going to learn all types of different strategies as well. You asked the question, you know, this coming week we're gonna talk about tax and legal strategies. We educate people on short sales or wholesaling or acquisitions. You know, that's going to come up in November. How to find properties in this market.
Right. And actually, Daryl brought up a big point about our meeting and a couple of others that we promote that other people put on in our area in San Diego and Orange County, that it's not a big sales pitch. It's strongly discouraged. People will be uninvited from attending if it turns into a pitch fest and everybody run to the back of the room with a credit card. That's not allowed. It really is about the networking and educating and even having done this for a while ourselves, I mean, we're learning something new every day, or we run into a situation, say on a deal that, you know, every one of them is a little different, and we'll go and we'll go to these networking events and we'll find somebody that's done it, or if they haven't, that's, you know, been in the business long enough to help us come up with ideas or guide us and send us in the right direction to ask the right person the question. So it's tremendous to our business.
Part of the success.
Well, and the reason why if I could interject here real quick, is for our listeners out there. The reason why I wanted you, Daryl and Imran, to come on the show is that their club is fantastic, and I don't want to take away from them, but it's really very similar to your typical real estate investment clubs around the country. They have a generic model in some ways, where there's a market update, people are sharing deals, they have a good speaker, it's affordable. And I think these guys have done a great job in San Diego. They invite me down once a year. But I really wanted to highlight this on the show today just for a moment more, is just because, folks, in your local area, there's a club just like this. I can guarantee it. And one of the best places to start, let me give you a website again, is www.nationalrea.com, nationalreia.com, nationalrea.com, is a great place to start. But once you get into your little community network and start playing on LinkedIn and Facebook and talking to your friends and, hey, who are you guys? What clubs are you going to? There's several here in Orange County that are fantastic, that are sponsored from non-national RIA standpoints, the Investment Club for Women. There's just so many. And so I love what these guys are doing, and I think they do a great job. Last question, if I can ask you guys, what perspective would you tell people to have when they go to these clubs? Like, what shouldn't they expect, and what should they expect so that they get the most, like you said, bang for their buck when they go to a local club?
Well, that's a good question. You know, I think they should expect to have some awesome networking. You know, we network an hour before. We go to the club, we get educated, and then we network afterwards as well. You know, we've actually probably have made thousands, tens of hundreds of thousands of dollars just by being at the club and networking. So they should expect to network. They shouldn't expect to, or they should expect to leave their credit cards at home, because we're not going to try to sell them anything.
Well, not just us. I mean, any club. I mean, if they're looking wherever they're going, whether, you know, Texas, Montana, this one, they don't want to feel that they're being pressured to buy something. Stay away from those clubs.
And realize that as you're at the clubs, people are there to help. You know, questions are actually, we love questions. We love people asking us, you know, what do we do in this situation? Because we like educating. We like to give back. You know, we've had our turn, and it's time for us to share.
Yeah, and I think as a newbie, going out to any club out there, one, do it. You know, Mark is so right. I mean, there's one in every town. If there isn't one, you know, in your town, start one.
Great point. That's a great point. I like that. Just get out there and create your own club if you can't find a good one. It's not. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great concept.
And you said it. Get out there and I mean, you can be a fly on the wall maybe for a little while, but you're going to want to ask questions. You want to utilize the club. You know, the club is going to provide, you know, a good club. It's been around for a while. They'll provide, information and a platform for people to voice, you know, what's going on or what's available right now. But you also want to get into the networking aspect of it and meet people. It's these relationships, and you never know when that relationship's going to help you. It could be years down the road. Don't discount anybody. Don't just go for the big shiny guy in the suit that's been doing it for 20 years. Actually, it's probably the guy in the flip-flops and shorts that's the multimillionaire anyway. And, you know, one of my mentors always said, every dud knows a stud, right? I mean, you never know who's going to right. You never know who's going to connect to who, but you've got to get out there and utilize it. And looking back, when Daryl and I started in our early days, I you know, now we see so much going on with these networking and clubs. I wish we'd known about it more or done more with it. It really would have helped us in our infancy stage when we felt scared and didn't know where to start and all that stuff. So
I love them. Well, the thing I like about these guys' club is they have that speed dating section where you get in a little table with and you look at someone and you have a minute and you ding a bell when you're done and then you rotate. No, I'm just joking. They don't do that at their club. But the speed dating networking would be pretty sweet. We ought to think about that. Okay, well, this Thursday night, it's going to be Matt Sorensen, Lee Chen, and myself. Matt Sorensen's flying in from Phoenix, Arizona for this. We're doing a panel on legal issues, partnering, asset protection. We're going to hit all sorts of Q&A in our panel. But, folks, if you're in the San Diego area or even Orange County, make the drive down. It'll be worth it Thursday night. And, guys, just real quick, what time and what hotel?
They can actually find it at sdicphoebe.com, and that stands for San Diego Investment Club for Investors by Investors.
Okay, repeat that one more time. Repeat it one more time.
www.sdicfibi.com. It's going to be at the Del Mar Hilton. We start networking at 6 p.m. on Thursday, October 3rd. And from there, actually, if they do look on the website, it's going to take them directly over to the Meetup website. There's a lot of great information and free tools. There's downloads. There's videos. They just have to click under the files section.
And I think if you just Google San Diego Investment Club, it pops right up.
Okay, Google San Diego Investment Club. And, folks, who wouldn't want to be in Del Mar on a Thursday night, you know, in October? I mean, unbelievable. So, well, guys,
we do have happy hour after, and that's where a lot of the you'll get to talk to Mark and Matt and Lee, you know, up real close and everybody else. And it's at the Del Mar Hilton. It's a great venue. It's a fun time. Everybody's
welcome.
Well, I appreciate you guys coming out, and it really was an opportunity for me. For everyone listening, this is not just about San Diego. This is your local market, finding a club, creating a club, and getting out and learning about real estate in the trenches, and that's how you do it. So, guys, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having us, Mark.
Appreciate it.
All right, you bet. Thanks. All right, well, folks, I'm excited to jump into this topic now for the hour. This is going to be, I think, even more additional tips and strategies that can help you succeed. And this is all about hiring contractors, subs, employees. What are the pitfalls? And so, as you know me, I love talking numbers, so we'll talk tax first. Let's talk tax. We're going to bring out one of our experts. I've got a whole panel here we're going to be introducing throughout the rest of this 45 minutes. I'm just pumped. I'm standing up here at my stand-up desk. I'm drinking my Monster Zero Ultra. Man, I'm just flying high, so this is good stuff. All right. I want to hit taxes first. So I want to bring out Dustin Johnson, a manager at our firm, K&E CPAs, Culinary CPAs. He's in the throes of the last 2 weeks of tax season. It's amazing we even got him on the line with us right now. Dustin, welcome to the show.
Oh, Mark, always a pleasure.
Dude, you're awesome. Thanks for cutting into your lunchtime here to come on and call out. Okay, now here's the deal, Dustin. Folks, before we talk about the legal issues for a minute, which are there's a ton here we're going to get into, let's just talk about the tax issues for a minute. Dustin, what happens when someone walks into your office and says, hey, I rehabbed a property, or I've repaired my home, and I want to take a tax deduction for the home office, or I've converted my personal home into a rental, and they want to do some depreciation or some strict deductions, and Dustin, they have no documentation. They did this all under the table with people. How hard does that make for you as an accountant?
Well, it definitely raises the blood pressure for one because of the audit risk. But I think a lot of times we lose a lot of deductions either on the erring on the side of caution or just forgetting who we paid and what we spent our money on. So that's one of the biggest things, I guess two of the biggest things for me.
No, that's a great point, because when we're paying people under the table, we're typically dealing in cash, we don't have a paper trail, and at the end of the day, we want to substantiate a deduction. It makes it tough, and especially under an audit, forget it. If an auditor comes in, you're not going to get the write-off. Now, I think, Dustin, we can say as accountants, we're going to help try to recreate that picture, and we'll take a deduction, but we're going to warn the client that under audit, it could be a problem. I mean, we're not saying you can't get the deduction, but we're saying it could be an issue, right?
Absolutely. You know, we'll look at what expenses have been taken, and we do try and recreate financials for our clients, a profit and loss and a good balance sheet to capture any of those expenses for properties that have been sold or properties that are still on the books. But you can only do so much without any documentation. And you know, we talk to our clients about that, hey, we've put as much as we can on here, what you've provided us, and you just need to know that in case of an audit, be prepared to try and document some of these numbers that you've given us.
Yeah, it's crazy. Okay, a couple other points real quick, folks. This is really helpful. 1099s. Okay, now we're going to talk about the distinction between employees let's do that first. I think that maybe we should do that first. Now, I'll take a little bit of unilateral commenting here as the host, if that's acceptable with you, Dustin, but not to put you on the spot too much. So I want to just highlight this. In my newsletter today, in the weekly message, I commented on the difference between employees and subcontractors. Now, this is a big issue, and there's a lot of people that think, oh, they're a subcontractor. You know, I'm just going to 1099 them. When they look like an employee, they act like an employee, they smell like an employee, they're obviously an employee. And when that happens, folks, your exposure for workers' comp issues and employment taxes goes through the roof. Now, we're going to talk about a little bit later here, of course, contractors and subs and who you can hire and paying under the table and some additional exposure. But just talking about payroll taxes, again, keeping on the tax front here for a minute, this can be a major issue, Dustin. I mean, it's not just the feds either. The state will come in and look. What are your thoughts on this, this payroll employee dodge, if you will?
You know, it's really a short-term fix for a lot of people. They look at it and they don't want to have to set up with the state and don't want to file the payroll forms and pay the payroll taxes that they should be. But they're really, you know, from a tax standpoint, not let alone illegal, you'll get into that, but they're really on the hook for a lot of money if an audit comes down and it's deemed to be those independent contractors are deemed to be employees. There's penalties, and I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but you're looking at a lot of back taxes and penalties on what you should have done correctly in the first place.
Yeah, no, great comment. And I highlight three issues. So real quick, everybody, if you control these, there's three factors that the Department of Labor will look at and the IRS. I put them in the newsletter today. Go read them in detail. It's behavior control, number one. Do you control the actual work, their training, the operation, and their daily instructions? Number two, financial control. Do you hire and supervise and pay assistance to the workers? I have them on an hourly situation rather than a per-project pay. And number three, what's the type of relationship? What work hours do you require? Do you have the right to fire the worker in terms to do that? Would they think of themselves as an employee? If you, in any one of these situations, they, again, look, act, and smell like an employee, you've got a responsibility to pay payroll taxes. And I know it sucks, but you got to pony up. And we're going to talk about here in a minute more from the legal aspect. When they're deemed to be an employee, but you don't treat them like an employee, your legal exposure can just go off the chart too. So Folks, pony up, get it done right. We've got payroll services at our office too. And Dustin, last thing, if they are a contractor, which we would love it, most people, if we can, we want to get these people in that contractor classification. How does the 1099 work, real quick?
You need to, with the 1099, you need to make those out to any individual or partnership, and some corporations, depending on the type of service, but individuals and partnerships that provide any service to you in excess of $600. You need to file
throughout the year. So if I pay someone more than $600, I need to issue them a 1099. Those are due in January, correct?
Well, they're due to that person in January. They're due to the IRS at the end of February. So that's when the penalties can be assessed. It's the end of February. But you're right. January to the person.
Okay, so ship them out in January. Send in the transmittal or copy to the IRS in February. And I think with this whole 1099 situation, it doesn't have to be laborious. It doesn't have to be scary. I'm going to just say two letters, W-9. Get out there, and when new people start working for you, have them fill out a W-9. You've got their address, you've got their social, and you're done. Just grab a W-9 every time someone works for you. And then in January, you make an assessment as to how much you paid them. You send them a 1099. Folks, that's how you get the write-off. I mean, this is so, so important. Dustin, any final words you got for us?
No, just to reiterate that, you know, the W-9 before the project is done. We've had so many clients that we've been that have asked us to fill out 1099s for them that they didn't ever get this information, and to track down the individual is almost impossible, and it's more time consuming and a headache after the fact than it should be. So get that W-9 right at the beginning of the project. We'll get them taken care of, filled out, and sent out, so that there aren't any penalties assessed on the 1099 filings.
I love it. Great point. Well, Dustin Johnson, manager, a CPA, been within our firm for years, does a fantastic job. I know many of you that are listening to the show have worked with Dustin before. Kohler & Ayer CPA is based out of southern Utah. Dustin, thank you so much. Happy tax season.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you soon. We'll talk to you after October 15th. There you go. All right. Well, that's Dustin Johnson, folks. Okay, now I want to introduce our next two experts that are going to come on the show with us today. One of our regular contributors who many of you have heard before, and representing the state of California today in the corner wearing the – sorry, I watched a little too much HBO boxing over the weekend, I guess. Lee Chen. Lee Chen on the show. Lee, welcome to the show. Lee, are you there? There we go.
Yes, Mark, I'm here. Sorry about that. I'm all greased up and ready to go.
There you go. Sorry. I think you were expecting a longer introduction, so I pulled it. You're like, grabbing the phone on the corner of your desk. All right, so Lee Chen, an attorney, and he's been in court hundreds of times. I love it. He's the guy that I actually can watch in action as your typical attorney. He does a fantastic job consulting our clients around the country and, of course, in California. Our next expert that I'm excited to have on our show today, a first-time guest, and we hope to have more of him on the show, is Peter Christensen. He's a lawyer. Now, don't hold this against him. He did go to BYU, but that's all right. They're having a crappy season, so it's okay. Utes beat him last week, so I'm happy about that. But I'm sure he's going to get a moment to comment on that. He is the senior legal counsel at the Utah Association of Realtors. He oversees the professional standards program, the legal hotline, the arbitration program, and improving the mediation program as well under the Utah Association of Realtors. So he's in the nitty-gritty every day of disputes and helping educate people on professional standards. So representing the state of Utah, Peter, thanks for being on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hey, you bet, man. We're excited to have you. This is going to be really, really a treat to have you here. Now, you're not too offended about the BYU comment, are you? You're okay?
I'm just holding off for basketball season. We're just we'll see if that goes a little better.
Yeah, how's Jimmer doing? I haven't even heard. How's Jimmer doing?
We're trying to get him back for a fifth year. Pull him out of the team situation. Get him back to BYU where he's loved.
Yeah, I think you need Jimmer. So he's the man. So Well, there you go. Well, now our final guest here that we're really excited to have here as a new guest for first time is Tyler Palmer. He's the representing the state of Arizona today. Guys, is this a powerful radio show? I am so pumped about this. He's from the Arizona Register of Contractors. He's the chief of staff of the ROC. His job functions include being the legislative liaison, the ombudsman, the public information officer, and overall overseeing all the development and monitoring of the budget and communication with the legislators and officials and staff. He has got it dialed in on what contractors' issues are in the state of Arizona. So we're excited to get his perspective on this topic as well. And Tyler, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Hey. I'm glad to hear it. Now, folks, I want you to know this was not planned, because when I started to do some research on Tyler to have him on the show and do my introduction, I found out, yes, I think he went to BYU as well. I don't know how this happened.
Yeah.
Tyler, is that true?
You'll have to watch the BYU jokes.
Important numbers. I like it.
This is not good, folks. I think this could be a first time in the history of the show in 6 years that I've had two BYU fans on the show at the same time. I'm feeling a little, yeah, like the minority here. All right. Well, guys, thanks for being here. Now, as everyone knows, that if you've just joined us, for those that have been on the show know, we're talking about today contractors, subcontractors, handymen, hiring people under the table, and all these issues that a lot of people just put on a blind eye for. They're doing a rehab on their rental, they're working on their primary residence, and they just think, how can I get the cheapest price, hire someone, and get the job done? Well, having that type of mentality can be just plain old dangerous. And so I'd like to first, as we jump around here a little bit, but Peter, let me ask you a question here first. I mean, you're dealing with arbitration and mediation on a daily basis with people that maybe should have or could have done a better job hiring the right type of worker. What type of issues are you seeing in Utah, and what are people kind of turning a blind eye to? What are some of these hot items that are really causing problems for people when they're doing their rehabs and fix and flips and things like that?
Yeah, good question, and it is a big deal right now, especially with the inventory of distressed property and a lot of people jumping into that investment side of things and wanting to grab properties and flip them. And it's easy to look at some cost savings by cutting corners, but from my experience, and I see a lot of them that blow up, but from my experience, it really isn't worth the cost savings to cut the corners, to hire non-licensed individuals, to skip the permitting process, for a number of reasons. And first and foremost in what I do is we see disclosure issues. So disclosure is a big issue because in Utah, as in many states, sellers is required to disclose any material information as they're offloading the property. And one of those would be non-conforming additions and non-conforming work. And so if that wasn't done properly, the proper individuals weren't hired, it wasn't permitted, that's something a seller really needs to disclose on the way out. And if they don't, and it turns out there's a problem, and that buyer has to now expend thousands of dollars to remedy the problem, you're looking at a fraudulent non-disclosure claim against that seller, so they're going to end up in a lawsuit. And even if the permitting's not the issue, if the work's not done correctly and issues arise from shoddy craftsmanship, again, the seller's probably looking at a lawsuit from that buyer saying, you did this all wrong. Connections weren't made with the plumbing. The electrical was using subpar materials. And so it can get you in a lot of hot water there and lawsuits you don't want to be in.
Wow, excellent comment. And, you know, this is really, I like this from this realtor perspective, and that's, of course, in the realm you are at the association there in Utah. So that's one actually I didn't expect you to comment on, and that's really is insightful, you know, this disclosure issue that starts to that can come back and bite you in the rear as well. But Tyler, from a contractor standpoint, there's a lot of exposure hiring non-licensed contractors as well. And this whole handyman, can I hire someone under the table? You sent me some incredible little articles and disclosures there that are you guys are sending out all the time in Arizona. Maybe let's open it up too. What are some of the key problems you're seeing there in Arizona?
Yeah, so, you know, we hear about this issue all the time, and the question we have is it a big deal or is it not a big deal? You know, is it widespread, in other words? And you know, from our perspective, one of the things we'd like to get down to talking about, and these things we know are, why do you need to hire a licensed contractor? And so what do you get when you hire licensed? You know, you get someone with experience. They've passed an exam. They've, you know, put up a bond in case the project goes bad, and they have insurance, you know, such as workers' compensation insurance. So if the project goes bad and you've got a licensed contractor, you've got pretty good odds that it will get resolved. Additionally, projects with licensed contractors don't go bad very often. We've got about 40,000 licensed contractors in Arizona. 93% of them don't get any complaints in a given year. And of those that get complaints, 99% get less than three. So again, if you hire a licensed contractor, you've got a pretty close to guarantee, you know, pretty close to a sure thing that it's going to turn out well. If it goes poorly, you know, there's a complaint process. You don't have to go to court. You can file a complaint with us. We will investigate and try to encourage the contractor to resolve the poor work if we find any. And again, that's free, and you don't have to go to court for that. And contractors typically resolve them, because if they don't, they lose their contractor's license. And so you hire a licensed contractor for a lot of those reasons. If you hire unlicensed, you lose out on those. You know, you don't have the experience, you don't have the exam, you don't have a bond. If it goes poorly, you have to go to court and hopefully get a restitution order. And again, hopefully that gets paid, which those who have gotten restitution orders know that may be a harder thing to do than actually getting the order. So those are the reasons why you hire licensed.
No, great comment. And, you know, I expected this question, and I just got an email from one of our listeners that said, Mark, can I act as owner-contractor on a rehab, and what are the concerns? And
yeah, great question.
Let me throw that out. Well, Tyler, why don't you comment first, right off the bat? What are your thoughts, being in the contractor board?
Yeah, so I'm sure the laws are different in every state. Arizona's got a list of exemptions, you know, and these exemptions are types of people or entities that don't need a contractor's license. In Arizona, the exemption that applies, I think, to this question, if I understand it, is, you know, I own this house and I'm living in it. If I live in it, plan to live in it, can I work in it? Yes, absolutely. That you don't need a contractor's license to do that. In contrast, say I own the house, but it's, you know, my second, third, or fourth house, I don't plan on living in it. I'm just going to fix it and flip it. That is not an exemption because it's a business. You know, you're not exempt to say, and that probably goes to the disclosure issue that I think Peter was talking about. It's prima facie evidence under the law. So there's a nice legal term for you, right? So it's presumed that if you sell it within a year, it's presumed that you didn't intend to live there, and so you don't have the exemption saying that I don't need a license just because I own it.
So can you be fined as a I like what you said, and everybody, this is important for you to understand the rules in your state. The goal of today's show is to highlight these issues so that you can do some research in your particular situation. But in Arizona, if I get nabbed for acting as a general contractor, even if on a rehab, what are the ramifications? Is it a fine? What can happen?
Yeah, in Arizona, that would be called acting as a contractor without a license. In Arizona, that is a Class 1 misdemeanor, and so it carries with it the penalties of being a Class 1 misdemeanor. It's up to 6 months jail term and a fine of $2,500. That is for every day. The $2,500 is the criminal penalties. We also have civil authority to issue civil penalties, and those penalties can go up to $2,500 for every day that a violation occurs. And so those are the types of, you know, violations or penalties for breaking those laws. in terms of, you know, acting as a contractor without a license here in Arizona.
Wow, wow. Okay, now I want to turn to this is just fantastic information. Lee Chen, let me throw out a, kind of as another lawyer here on our call out of the state of California, another host of rules that are different than other states, usually a little bit more. A lot of people are rushing out of the state because there's so many regulations and laws, but you know, in Arizona, you can drive down the road and see some guy with a gun on his holster. I got to love that, Tyler. That's pretty cool. Now, Lee, let's say I'm working as an owner-contractor, maybe even on my own house, and I go pay someone under the table. What concerns come to your mind? Is it really – now, we talked about it from a tax perspective just a moment ago with Dustin Johnson. But let's say we even get a receipt or we deal with the tax tracking and the bookkeeping. But what are your concerns – from a legal perspective, and I know you've been to court on things like this, paying people under the table. What comes to mind?
Well, I think a lot of this has already been covered by what Dustin said about, you know, the deductibility of the expense and what else has been said about, you know, the bonding. You know, for me, that's an important factor. I've hired licensed contractors who went out of business for 3 years. I discovered that the work was bad, but I was still able to recover on a bond for a contractor that's no longer doing business, hasn't been doing business in 3 years. I was still able to get my money from the shoddy work. So bonding is important. What kind of warranties are they giving? I mean, you're pretty much taking all the risks when you are paying somebody under the table or hiring a unlicensed contractor. It's really, you're taking all the risk.
Well, Lee, what happens if someone gets hurt? What happens if someone gets hurt on the job?
Well, you know, I get this question a lot. You know, with any contractor, I always want them to, you know, first make sure that they have workers' comp. And if they are, I mean, you know, We can't prevent it. Some, you know, for some jobs they're going to hire handyman or unlicensed people. I want them to sign something that says that they're going to be responsible for, you know, all their workers. They're going to waive any you know, liability for personal injuries. They understand the risks. You know, I want them to waive all of that.
Well, now I guess what I'm trying to pull out of you here, and I'm just going to say it, if you hire someone under the table and they get hurt at your home, are you personally liable?
You very well could be.
Okay. So I think that's a really important point, and it comes to that workers' comp issue, that when you're hiring someone to work at your home, if they're not licensed, is your homeowner's insurance going to help? Maybe, maybe not. And if they even could make the argument that they were under some hourly control, maybe they would make the argument that workers' comp should have been purchased by you. So this is where I think it gets scary too, is that when you're hiring people unlicensed on your home, it can really expose you. Tyler, Peter, any thoughts on that, the exposure of hiring someone unlicensed for the person that's doing the hiring?
Yeah, a lot of issues, and you've touched on a few of them, but I think the liability is huge. And good luck recovering, like was pointed out by Lee, if something goes wrong and you're left holding the bill there. It's just not going to be pretty for you. You're not going to find a company that's backing that person with money. Not to mention that, what are you getting? Why are they not licensed? What don't they know? What steps did they not want to take? And do they really know what they're doing? And so a lot of problems, especially in the resale market afterwards of being left with the bills and trying to get that property to be conforming after that.
You bet. And let me throw this out. I just got another email question, and I should mention this for all of our listeners. You're certainly welcome to call in and ask a question live. For those that are already on the line, you can press the number 1, and Lisa in the studio will bring it out live. If you'd like to call in, turn off the volume on your computer and or your phone and call us at 646-200-4285. If you are available to send an email, that is fine. That's a great way to ask a question. So mark@markjkohler would be great. That's me. I'm opening my email here as the show continues. So that's mark, M-A-R-K, at markjkohler.com. Well, the question I just got here was an immediate quick email from Lee's comments. Lee, how can I be expected to get this host of paperwork when hiring a contractor? Is there anything I can do to make this process simpler when I'm working on a property? What are your that's a tough one. Lee, what are your thoughts initially? Oh, sorry, and I had him on mute. Go ahead, Lee.
I think all the tips that have been given are, you know, you just have to have this little checklist. I mean, you know, Dustin mentioned getting a W-9. You know, I don't know how many contractors I interviewed when I asked them for a W-9, they start kind of trying to weasel their way out of that, and it makes me wonder. Or I ask for their insurance, and they will, well, you know, they start asking me why, as if I'm asking for something that's unreasonable. You know, asking questions and, you know, making sure your contracts, you know, are clear as to what exactly are they going to do, you know, what materials are they going to use, and making sure that they do have all the, you know, the bonding and the insurance. And, you know, I've had professional rehabbers who've been doing this for years who've come to me, and I've checked their contractor, and their contractor wasn't licensed.
Tyler, what do you recommend for homeowners and, I guess, real estate investors that are rehabbing? Is there a simple way to approach this process, just to ask for a contract up front and a couple things, or is it – I feel like it's harder than buying a house to just find a contractor and make sure all my boxes are checked. It sounds a little laborious.
Boy, I've bought a few houses. I hope not. But, yeah, I know what you mean. There are a lot of records, and sometimes because of the newness, it's difficult. From our agency, and I know California as well, we try to educate consumers on here's some things you need to do before you hire a contractor. And so we've got a lot of brochures or tips on our website, some of the basic ones, and some that, in addition to what's been mentioned, you know, you want to get bids. You want to check the licenses. Never pay cash. Don't pay cash is a big one. And get a payment schedule, meaning don't let your payments get ahead of the work. And also that you have a detailed schedule of, hey, the contractor is going to use this material. He's going to finish by this date. And have a detailed schedule. And so a lot of the times when we investigate complaints and we look at, and by the way, minimum contract items are established in state law here, and so the contractor is supposed to follow that. When we go out and investigate and say, hey, what material was supposed to be used, and the homeowner says, I bought granite, and the contractor says, no, you bought you know, something less expensive than granite, if it's not in the contract, you know, it's really hard to say who's in the right. So, you know, they need to have a good contract with detailed records, a payment schedule, don't pay cash, all those other things about workers' compensation, checking references. And while this does seem somewhat overwhelming, I know Arizona, and I believe I've seen some from California, and so I think other states will do the same thing where we provide tips, you know, almost like a checklist for consumers to use when hiring a contractor.
Excellent, excellent. And Lee, I want to come back to you on the handyman issue, which is unique to California in some ways and the limits there. But Peter, what are your thoughts on some of these issues and what you're seeing with your mediations, your arbitrations, and realtors getting sucked into these fights? What are some cautionary points you have for our people?
Do it right. Get the permits, and you'll save yourself a lot of trouble in the long run. And do your homework.
Peter, let me interject. I like what you brought up about permits. This is the second time you've done that, and I've heard this before too. You know, a lot of people, even on their own home, they'll say, oh, let's remodel this or the kitchen or do an add-on, and they just go down to Home Depot, load up the truck, and start breaking down walls. And more and more city inspectors and engineers are driving around town seeing this type of work going on, and they're certainly apt to just walk up and knock on the door and go, what's going on? And if you don't have a permit, that could really shut down your project and even put your rehab or fix and flip on hold for months if you really piss off the wrong person at the city. What are your thoughts on that? Is that something you've seen some of your folks fall into that trap, or what are your thoughts?
Definitely, definitely, especially as we've seen city revenues drop over the past 4 or 5 years. It was not unheard of for inspectors to patrol the streets looking for dumpsters for hire and knowing there's probably some construction work going on there, and I'll see if there's a permit. And hopefully that slowed down with the boom, in, at least in Utah, with new construction. But, no, it causes a lot of problems, and a lot of folks equate need for licensure to need for a permit, and they're two separate issues but interrelated. If you don't need a license to do it, doesn't mean you don't necessarily need a permit for it, and that's all governed by local city ordinances. And so even though I don't need a license to rehab my own home or put my own addition on, I can do it on my own, I still need a permit from the city. And if I don't get one, and I understand it is cumbersome and you want to, you know, take out a kitchen counter and you want to just expand things a little bit, and you have to go through the city and get plans inspected and look for exemptions and hope it falls under them. And it is cumbersome. But at the end of the day, if you're off on a wall by a couple inches and the day of reckoning comes and you decide, oh, I should have gotten that permitted, I'm going to go sell it, my realtor's telling me, oh, yeah, by the way, you're going to have to tell them you didn't get a permit for that kitchen remodel. And if you want to be all on the up and up, then you better disclose that. And so you say, well, let's just go get it inspected now. And you're off 2 inches on a wall. Well, they're not going to grant you a variance and say, don't worry about it. They're going to say, you should have come to us first and done it right. And so now that remodel, it's already cost you 20, 30 grand, is going to cost you 3, 4, 5 grand more to fix a 1 or 2 inch difference, or the plumbing wasn't done just right. And so issues that you could have dealt with up front and minimized your costs and just put in the few $100 worth of money into the permitting process is now going to cost you a lot more, and you may get a penalty tacked on from your local city, your local municipality, for not going through the proper process in the first place. So the potential of it costing you more money in the long run is too great to just I know it's a pain, but just do it. Just go for it. Yeah. Pay the permitting fee and do it right.
I like it. Well, we got a live feed here on our blog talk, so I want to make a few comments here. First, we've got a question on individuals and partnerships on the 1099. Let me just say, Kirby, that yes, if you get a W-9 from someone and they don't have a corporation, you will need to issue them a 1099 if they're a partnership or LLC. The only people that are exempt from a 1099, or I should say the only entity is a corporation. So make sure you get the W-9, you get a Social Security number and a tax ID number. Now, if they're a corporation, you won't have to issue a 1099. But that doesn't mean you don't get the W-9. Anybody that works on your projects, folks, get the W-9. If you're hiring a contractor, make sure that you have the contractor agreement, the construction agreement, the subcontractor agreement, whatever it may be. Quick comment from Ray. He says, go Utes. Ray, I'm right behind you. Go Utes this Thursday night, UCLA in Salt Lake, huh? Woo! All right, so there you go. Thanks, Ray. Thomas Mark comments that these permits are for city revenues for sure. Per hour rate in California in the Bay Area can be quite high for inspectors to get permit. My HOA paid $1,000 for a tree removal with the work costing $800. $1,000 was for the permit. Great comments, guys. So I want to go back to this topic of hiring a crew. Now, this was a comment that someone had in Sacramento when I was doing the workshop this weekend, is that if I have a crew and I'm going out and I'm buying properties and I'm rehabbing and I'm hiring my son and his friends to do the work and I'm paying them under the table, people, be careful. And I think this is a great comment from Tyler. Again, we've got Tyler Palmer here from the ROC, Chief of Staff for the Register of Contractors in Arizona, has stated clearly, be careful as to what your exemption is to be an owner contractor on your own property. If this is not your personal home and it's a fix and flip rehab and you're not a licensed contractor, on top of the fact you're hiring kids under the table to do the work, if anybody gets hurt on that job, you could have personal exposure for their injury. You could have fines and penalties and jail time from the city and state for going out and doing this work unlicensed. Be very, very careful. Now, do I want my clients out there doing real estate deals? Absolutely. We just had excellent comments from Daryl and Emron on the options for going to investment clubs and getting educated and networking. But those can be one of the best places to network, too, and find good, affordable contractors that know what you're trying to do. So, folks, be really, really careful. Tyler, what are your thoughts about this, too, hiring your own crew? I feel like it's a different way of asking maybe the same question, but what concerns do you have when you see people out there unlicensed and then not only being unlicensed but then hiring other people to work under them? It's got to exasperate the problem.
Yeah, and we just had a recent major media story here in Arizona about even licensed contractors hiring crews. And so it is an issue. It tacks into a lot of things. They interviewed Department of Labor, for example, in the story with regards to tax laws. And so it's not just, the quality of the work. And that's what we'll investigate with the Register of Contractors. We're going to look at, okay, does it meet the minimum work standards? And that's where when you hire licensed, you get experience, you get an exam that's been passed, you get bonds, you get insurance. You get a process to seek a remedy. And when you go unlicensed, you just miss out on all those things. And I think it was said well before from someone here was that you've taken all those risks upon yourself and said, I'll roll the dice and hope it turns out well. And you've kind of cut out any remedy you perhaps would have had. So we try to help, homeowners be aware of, here's why you hire licensed. We try to help licensed contractors be aware that, hey, if you're hiring crews, you may be liable of losing your license. That is one of our violations of hiring people and not abiding by, federal law, local tax law, and as well as contractor statutes.
Okay, now, Tyler, we're going to have you give out your website here in just a second. And, Peter, any sites you'd like to send people for more info? Real quick, Lee, tell us about the handyman issue, because a lot of people think, well, I don't want to go with a contractor. I can hire a handyman. What's the rules on that, real quick?
Well, in California, and when you say handyman, I'm assuming you mean an unlicensed person. Anything that costs $500 or more in terms of labor and materials, you got to hire a licensed person. So, if your handyman is doing some work that's over $600, they're violating the law in California.
There you go. And I think this is a great comment, folks, because you want to look at the handyman laws in your state, because if it's under a certain dollar amount, you can hire the neighbor next door, have a little contract and agreement, waive your liability for their injuries that could happen on the job. But if materials and labor, now this is important, not if they say, well, I'll put your water heater in, but the water heater costs $1,000, but their labor is only $200, you're already over the limit. You've got to call a licensed contracting plumber. So be cautious of looking at the labor and materials involved when hiring a handyman and keeping it under the $500 to $600 limit. So very, very important. Okay, so real quick, Tyler, where can you send people? And I think in any state, these might be wonderful checklists for people to look at. Where are you sending people in Arizona?
In Arizona, you can look at our website, which is www.az, it's in Arizona, azroc.gov. So again, that's www.azroc.gov. We have some consumer brochures and guides, several FAQs and things that can guide a consumer in any contract and project with the contractor.
I like it. Peter, any sources for additional information you'd send folks to?
Yeah, you can always check our website at UtahRealtors with an S on the end, .com. And we have frequently asked questions. We have articles we write quarterly and stuff like that that might be of use to them. And also Realtor.org, the National Association of Realtors website, has just a treasure trove of information.
I love it. And for those realtors out there using your legal hotline, excellent. And, of course, folks, if you need to get a hold of Lee Chen, you can call him directly for an appointment here at the firm. You know how to reach us. Well, I want to say thank you to Peter for coming on the show. Tyler, thank you so much, and I apologize for beating you up with BYU. Hopefully your season improves. Maybe
It'll
you'll find
better.
That young Jimmer again. It'll get better. Hey, thank you, gentlemen. We appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
And thank you. And Lee Chen, always a pleasure. Appreciate you being here. And folks, don't give up. Keep looking at real estate. Get out and network. Get in your local club. Follow the rules. You'll be blessed. You'll make more money. There too. Better with American Dream. Thank you so much, everyone. See you next Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, for another round of the Mark Kohler Show.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.